When clients don't make a decision, they either don't believe in the impact associated with not solving the problem, or they're skeptical about the results that the seller has suggested that they might see. If you want to sell hyper value, if you want to sell in an environment where people are making faster decisions, we need to put our client in a position where the client A, understands what it could be costing them if they don't solve it, and B, they need to understand here are the factors that lead to your success or failure.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Ian Altman to discuss same side selling, or SSS. They discuss what it is, its benefits, and how to properly implement it. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast for C-suite executives who want practical, implementable, repeatable insights to break through the barriers that are holding you back from your sales and marketing performance, those revenue goals. And we are tired of hope and hype and hubris, so we brought in an expert, Ian Altman. Ian has done it. He has started and sold and grown prior companies, taken their value from zero to over $1 billion, B. Since exiting those businesses, he has built an incredible reputation, and I've actually gotten to sit under his tutelage, read his books, gone through a workshop with a mutual client, and gained incredible value of the Same Side Selling Academy and the Same Side Selling, the book named Same Side Selling. So fabulous expert. I use it at Fitzmartin. We've revolutionized the way that we sell at Fitzmartin. And we're supposed to be experts on sales and marketing, Ian. I guess you can still teach old dogs new tricks. So Ian, today we would love to talk about that. He is definitely one of the top experts in the world on sales. His Same Side Selling Academy is an incredible sales development program. Again, I'm participating in it. And one of my favorite things is he lives in Maryland with two adultish children, one dog, and a wife who must be pleading for mercy after 25 years, and he claims he doesn't deserve. So welcome, Ian.
Sean, thanks so much. And I'm glad that you guys are putting things to work. One of the things I often comment to people is that we can share all these concepts and all these case studies, but it's the people who actually put the concepts to work. Those are the people who make a difference. And so I'm just thrilled when people put things into action and then they see great results. And I just hope that they don't sound so surprised when they see great results.
So the first thing that we applied here was the client vision pyramid. Maybe share quickly what that is.
So the idea of the client vision pyramid is that very often in business, what I hear from people is they say, look, you know, we offer a solution at a very high level and our competitors are kind of in the bottom, but our clients don't know the difference. And the concept that I teach behind the client vision pyramid is this notion of if you can position how you are compared to the rest of the industry for your clients, then they'll better understand what that is and be able to compare the two. So I can give you an example if that'd be helpful.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So the example would be, let's say in a business where you've got, you know, in your case, you're helping people with their marketing and sales strategy and things like that. You might say to people, well, gee, when people are looking for help in that area, they're usually looking at one of three levels. See, our industry is kind of shaped like a pyramid. At the base of the pyramid is, look, I just need a body. I need someone who can do this work. We can direct them. We don't need strategy. We just need a body who can execute and do some things. That's the effective level. The next level up in the pyramid, what we call the enhanced level. This is companies that have kind of a set program for marketing. You just feed into their routines and they produce something that's consistent with what they've done for other people. At the highest level is the engaged level. This is where you're dealing with a firm who takes the time to understand the nuances of your business, the market opportunities, and then share that with your audience and your markets to grow substantially and gain market share. Which level are you looking for? And in doing so, you'll probably describe different unique things that you offer at that engaged level. And then we get to ask the client, so which level are you looking for? And now they get to instantly recognize the difference between what you offer and what other people offer. The beauty of this is that my clients who use this, when clients pick them, they will often say, and you were the only people at the engaged level, but we made up the levels. So, you know, we're kind of setting the context around our business compared to the rest of the industry.
I am so glad that you used the word context, because that's the key, right? So I did this after learning this, and I'm on kind of a prospect that it's not the end of the world if we lose them. And I'm like, all right, I'll try this Ian Altman stuff. Let's see if this stuff really works. And I'm on a Zoom meeting with this marketing director at a top 40 accountancy in the country. And I get my Zoom meeting out and I use that terrible mouse and I try to draw the pyramid online. And at the end of it, there was this pause. And the person said, I am so glad you drew it that way, because now I understand. Not me. They understood the other people they were talking to.
Yeah.
And it positioned us very differently. It's like, okay, this guy's not making up stuff. It's good. Well, okay. So that's one really practical application how it's helped transform us. And we did get the work, by the way.
Great.
So you say your proposition says that solving customers' problems, as opposed to selling my stuff, my solutions, will transform sales results and it'll transform the morale of the sales team. At the same time, listeners, this is what's in it for you. 56% of all CEOs, according to PricewaterhouseCoopers' last CEO study, say that changing customer demands, customer preferences, are the greatest factor, the greatest thing that's going to impact their profitability. So you can either choose to have your sales and marketing teams continue to be outbound spewers of information, or what might they do?
Well, so the idea is this, is that in same-side selling, the principle that we teach is that rather than a game metaphor where you have a winner and a loser, or a battle metaphor, which is how most books about sales are written, where the loser dies, and then we wonder why we have all these adversarial positions with buyer and seller. Instead, in same-side selling, it's about getting on the same side, in essence, putting a puzzle together. So when you walk into a store and the hyper-ambitious salesperson walks up to you and says, may I help you? Our natural reaction is usually no thanks, just looking. So why do we do that? Well, we do that because we've been conditioned to believe that anybody who looks and acts like a salesperson is looking up for their interests, not our interests. And so if we think of the world of sales as having three personas, you have an order taker, a salesperson, and a subject matter expert. We want to make sure we show up as that subject matter expert who is there to solve, not sell. Because if we seem like the stereotypical salesperson, our clients become shut down and guarded because they don't trust and they've been trained not to trust salespeople. But if you can show up and say, here are the problems we're really good at solving for people just like you. You may not be having these challenges, but if you are, we have a track record of delivering great results for people who have that. What it does is it gets people to think, yeah, you know what? I am having one of those challenges. And now I have something to talk about. And more importantly, now I'm talking about their issues, not what it is that I'm selling. And so it changes this dialogue so that now if you end up with a prospect who's not a good fit, it's not this fear of rejection from the seller. Instead, it's, oh, well, these people don't have a challenge in one of the three areas that we can help them the most. So if that's the case, I'm just moving on to someone else because today they don't have that need.
I think to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, Ian, I know you will, you've got to have more opportunity than you have capacity, right? Because if you don't have enough opportunity, you're pressured as a salesperson, as an executive pressuring marketing and sales to take the wrong deals. Isn't that fundamental to what you just said?
It can be. I mean, it's one of the great misconceptions. I mean, here's why I say that. And you said I'd correct you if I disagreed. So I don't entirely disagree, but I'll give you kind of my take on it, which is
you disagree. Too often, come on.
Too often people pursue opportunities that it's either going to result in a bad opportunity that's not going to pan out anyhow and you're going to waste a lot of time. Or worse, you win the account, they become a toxic client, you get sucked into the vortex of evil. And now you dread ever taking on that account. So what we have to be able to do is have enough confidence that says, okay, we're defining the problems we solve, and we know there's enough of a market opportunity out there for that. Then we engage the right marketing arm and process and engine that says, okay, we're not going to market to these problems that we're good at solving. The only people who are going to be attracted to that are people who are facing those issues. And then we have something immediately to talk about, because when they call in, we say, what is it that inspired you to reach out to us about this? Or when we have outbound outreach, we say to them, look, when we reach out to people like you, Sean, it's usually because they're contacting us about one of three major issues. Let me share with you what those are. You can tell me if it's worth continuing the conversation. And now it's about, if you're looking to solve one of these three things, we might be a good fit. And if you're not, there's really not much for us to talk about. And it's disarming, because now they don't feel like you're just calling up selling. You're saying, look, here's, in essence, if I use a medical metaphor, here's a condition we're really good at treating. And these are some of the symptoms that might be an indication of that condition. So if you know for certain you don't have this condition and you're not experiencing any of these symptoms, then my treatment is irrelevant to you.
Yes. Wow. Okay. I'm not going to argue that more. Tell me, in this understanding buyer's needs and not being a salesman, because I know you've closed some significant deals that would have had some cheese behind them. How do you understand? How do you focus on understanding the buyer's needs and converting that sale? I know your book has some very specific methodologies, and you even parse down, I see things through a marketing lens that is a sales first marketing lens. That's critical to Fitzmartin. We exist to help salespeople win, but you see things through a sales lens. I doubt you've seen a lot of organizations that are aligned sales and marketing, where the head of marketing and the head of sales are really thinking the same way. I do think we do, and because of that sales first focus. But tell me the methodologies of understanding the buyer's needs, maybe more specifically, the outbound versus the inbound buyers.
So the biggest thing that many organizations, especially in the B2B world, struggle with is this. I'll ask them, I'll say, so what is it you guys sell? What do you do? Quick answers, concise. We sell this, we sell this, we sell that. Great. Why do clients need what you do? And then what they tell me is the same thing they just told me before about what it is they sell. I'm like, no. Not what is it that you do? Why do people need it? So the reality is, like, for example, I think about in your business, why do people need it? Well, it's because their message is falling on deaf ears. That someone else is gaining additional market share. They don't really understand who their customers are. They're concerned that, you know, someone else is dominating their market and they're not. They've got a great new offering, but no one knows about it. I mean, those are the types of problems that you solve. And so tapping into that becomes essential. What that means is that then, and we've got a whole structure we call the same side quadrants when we're meeting with clients. And the idea of the same side quadrants is, if I first can start the conversation about what is it that the client is trying to solve, then I get to ask questions about, well, what happens if you don't solve that? And what I'm in essence trying to do is make sure the client's convincing me that they have a problem that's important enough for them to solve that makes it worth my time to help them find a solution. Then I get to focus on, well, what does success look like?
As data compliance laws become more stringent, many organizations will soon have non-compliant CRM data. Maybe you have insufficient first-party data, or you bought information from an improperly validated third party. However, you got it. Fixing it before the 2023 deadline should be a top priority. Fitzmartin's Wake the Dead program takes dead CRM prospects and applies a behavioral science model to re-engage them into your pipeline. In this process, you can reclaim old prospects or delete old ones, giving you a clean and compliant database with new opportunities from previously forgotten contacts. By retargeting with email and text automation, clients you might have considered dead or unresponsive will move forward and become potential prospects once again. For more information, check out the show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
Ian, another quick sales story, if you don't mind. I'm sitting with the CEO of an organization, rapidly growing, emerging middle market, and he pulls up a spreadsheet, puts it on the screen, beautiful data, fractions of revenue, and I'm looking at the bottom quintile of revenue sources, and I'm thinking, I'm a smart business guy. So I say to the CEO, if we doubled the revenue from that bottom quintile of your customer base, how important would that be to you? Because I'm thinking, oh, this is a layup. I'm going to lay out everything I got on this deal. But you taught me to ask that question. And the CEO said, it wouldn't matter at all. Like, oh my gosh. So we went on. The conversation moved on. and into other areas that would matter. So yeah, I mean, it sounds so simple, but impact and importance is the quadrant you're referring to, and it is such a critical way. So some of this can be simple, right? Asking questions. Now, I think marketing should be asking those questions too, and sales should be asking the questions, and then they should come together. So for a common client that we have, Ian, one thing that we're doing for them, and I'm going to ask you to explain what a rant is, the sales force has gone out, talked to the customers, asked the right questions, and they've developed these rants. Now what we're doing in the process for this client's sales tools, all of the sales tools, is we're looking at the rants and looking at the messaging that is on the website. And in many, many places, they're not matching up. So we're in the process of flipping the conversation from what we care about, the thing that we make, the product, the service, because we're so passionate about that. And we're flipping that conversation to be what the buyer is passionate about. And it's extraordinary because there is alignment. And how many podcasts have been done about sales and marketing alignment and how to achieve it? And centricity is the name of this podcast. The idea is the buyer should be centered. Marketing should understand the buyer. Sales should understand the buyer. The net result of everybody lining up on the customer is sales and marketing alignment. I believe fully that sales and marketing, they get together in a room for a kumbaya moment, are never going to achieve it. But if they'll both follow your processes, follow the process of understanding the buyer, and if you align to the buyer, the net result, the yield of that is sales and marketing that's aligned. I think I just moved into preaching. I'm getting pumped up, Ian.
You know, once you get off that soapbox, I'll give a rebuttal or a comment here, Sean.
Come on, throw it at me.
I love seeing it. So the points that you touched on, this notion of sales and market alignment, it's so important because if your client gets a different message on a website than they do from the salesperson, they assume that one of them's lying. Now, the good news for the marketers, they usually assume it's the salesperson who's lying. So it's quite all right. But the idea is that when there's that misalignment, it creates mistrust. And if you've ever had a situation where a client says, well, that sounds really interesting. How are other people using this? In essence, what they're asking you is, what problem is that solving? Why would I need it? So there's research I've done with over 10,000 executives around the world on how people make and approve decisions. And the questions that ultimately people ask is they ask, what problem is this going to solve for me? Why do I need it? Namely, what happens if I don't solve this? And the third one is, what's the likely ROI, the results or outcome associated with making this investment? Well, so if we know that people start with what problem does this solve for me, then I can't use the old school elevator pitch of here's 30 seconds about what my company does because no one cares. So instead, we use this concept called the elevator rant. I always give my friend Bob London credit for the term. I don't know that Bob defines it the same way I do, but Bob was in a meeting somewhere and said, yeah, so we'll call it an elevator rant. I'm like, that's great. The way I define it is this. You're on an elevator. It's just you. The doors are about to close. Someone sticks their arm in. The doors spring open. Two people representing your ideal client walk on the elevator with you. Doors close behind them. They spend the entire ride up to, let's say, the 20th floor complaining to one another about something that when you hear it, you think, man, no one's better at solving that than we are. They're lucky to be on the elevator with us. What would it sound like in their words they would be complaining about? They might be complaining about their existing vendor. They might be complaining about a problem they didn't even know could be solved. But the elevator rant gets it in their words as close as possible to how they would actually say it, maybe excluding the profanity. But it usually has three components of emotion, issue, and impact. So it's emotion along the lines of, I'm sick and tired of, I'm frustrated, I'm concerned. The issue is the thing that's not working for them. And then the impact is, in essence, what is it costing them, either politically, financially, whatever, however they measure it, whatever their currency is, of not solving that. So if you can get that, it becomes really specific. And so, for example, I was speaking at an event yesterday, and there was somebody from a telecom company. And these guys do virtual PBX solutions. So, you know, if you think about it, voice over IP type solutions. And initially it was, well, what is it that you do? Like, what do you solve for people? Well, we provide phone service. Well, so does everybody. So what are their rants? The rants are, man, I'm sick and tired of, we work so hard on this campaign to get people to call us. When they call in, they get caught in this phone loop. They can't reach somebody. They get frustrated. And now they just call our competitor because they can't reach us. And when that happens, we're losing a potential $50,000 opportunity each time that happens. And it's got to be happening 5 or 10 times a day. Now we get an elevator rant where someone says, okay, that's worth solving. And if they have that problem, they want to speak to someone who can solve it.
Man, you're talking about my bank, I think. I'm on call 6 with a particular problem I'm dealing with right now. That's amazing. So Ian, let's put our diagnostic hats on. 72% of all new sales opportunities stall in the middle to late stages of a given B2B sales pipeline. That data is coming from a third party, sellingpower.com. If that, and by the way, that's what Fitzmartin does. We fix that problem. That's our flip. That's the rant.
Okay.
Nobody ever buys marketing. I love saying that. Nobody buys what we do.
Sure.
They solve the problem of the 72% of all stalled new sales opportunities. So what's going on with that? Why would, I mean, that's a lot of money wasted to get people to the middle of the funnel. And by that late stage, that means we've got sales time involved. And that's more expensive than marketing time. I mean, that's millions, trillions of dollars wasted in the middle of the pipeline. So what does the buyer need? What do they need from marketing, or what do they need from sales? Hopefully they're aligned on this rant, but what does your experience teach you is going on there?
Here's the funny part. So they say 72% of the deals are lost, you know, halfway through the process. I'd say of those 72% that are lost, 95% were actually lost in the first meeting or two, and people just didn't know it. Okay. So the salesperson is more passionate about pursuing this opportunity than the client is. So it's okay if you lose to a competitor because the client felt they had a better solution than you did. When you lose to a non-decision, what you've just discovered is that your client cared less about this than you did. And so you were all in trying to pursue this because you were focused on the sale. The client couldn't care less and wasn't focused on what they were trying to solve and what the outcome was. And so if early on in the process, instead of us taking the approach of, let me convince you why our stuff is so great, what we want to do is say, you know what, for the right clients, our stuff is great, but not everybody's a fit for that. There are three things I need to learn about your business and the opportunity that you're facing to make sure that we can deliver similar results for you that we have for other people. So in essence, until you've convinced me that you have a problem that you're committed to solving, I'm not going to spend a lot of time in this trying to pitch you on a solution to something that you haven't convinced me is worth solving.
Interesting.
That's where I think most of these deals get stuck. So I hear these stats all the time. And it's like, oh yeah, so you know, our typical sales cycle is 9 months long, and we lose like more than half of our deals between months 6 through 9. All of a sudden the client just starts ghosting us. So what do my clients start to discover? Well, my clients have a more structured way of starting with the problems they solve. They present this idea of the client vision pyramid early on. The client says, yep, I want that engaged level. They go through these same side quadrants to define how important this is to the client and why it matters, what success looks like. And so what's the net-net? Well, the net-net result is, oh, by the way, our sales cycle, instead of being 9 months now, our average sale is 4 months. And our average deal, instead of being $200,000, is now $600,000. So we're closing deals that are 3 times the size in less than half the time. Well, it's not that their sales cycle before was 9 months on average. It's that occasionally something would come in after a long time, but they couldn't get to what was actually motivating or urgent for the client because they weren't asking the right questions. And now if they have the right structure, they quickly find out which deals are worth pursuing, which ones aren't. There's a construction company out in California where it's a commercial construction company. They were doing between $100 and $120 million a year for 3 years. It's one of the case studies on our website. And we took this approach of, look, every deal, here's the way we're going to approach it. Here's the process we're going to follow. 3 years later, including COVID, they're doing $600 million a year. Right? So in a time where people aren't doing as much construction, they're dominating. My favorite part is that I now get inbound calls from people who are in construction in Northern California. And they'll start by saying, well, you know, we used to be really competitive and there's just one construction company that's just like dominating us and we don't know what's going on. I'm just going to chuckling, like I kind of have an idea what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. So it seems to me that a marketing organization that properly supports this methodology should have a study and a way and an approach to this middle of the funnel, late stage prospect list, the pipeline list, in a way that it should be engaging with these prospects. Now, sales notoriously stiff arms marketing the closer to the finishing table we get. But it seems like marketing could serve, especially a stalled or a stale deal. How would they do that? How could marketing apply these questions in its communications? Keeping in mind, marketing could be doing communications that for all apparent purposes looks like the salesperson reaching out one-to-one. So let's open up that caveat. But
well, so in many cases, what it comes down to is when clients don't make a decision, they either don't believe in the impact associated with not solving the problem, or they're skeptical about the results that the seller has suggested that they might see. So if you want to sell hyper value, if you want to sell in an environment where people are making faster decisions, we need to put our client in a position where the client A, understands what it could be costing them if they don't solve it, and B, they need to understand here are the factors that lead to your success or failure. So if I'm a marketing organization, how do I support my salespeople in that middle of the funnel? Guess what? I create content that says, here are some of the hidden costs associated with not solving this problem. Here are some of the blind spots that people have associated with, you know, not understanding the impact of this, the impact of that. And then here are some of the things that lead to success in these types of implementations. Here are the risks associated with those implementations that might lead you to not being successful. Now, the challenge is that if I create that and it sounds like too much marketing speak, then the client doesn't believe it. If I have a call to action on the end that says, and this is why you should work with us, I've just destroyed my own messaging. I've got to be even-handed and say, look, even if your vendor does everything right, here are three things that can sabotage your deal internally. And so here are ways to cover those. Well, what your client hears is, okay, so these guys understand that it's not all them, that we have a role in this too. They've identified where the potential traps are. I think we can navigate this thing, and they've given us a realistic viewpoint into this. I'm more comfortable working with them than with somebody else. We're just usually too afraid to talk about what could go wrong.
At Centricity, our model is built around behavioral science. And one of the things that behavioral science teaches us is that before somebody changes behavior, they are going to look back. They're going to look at the way they have been doing things. And that's part of the consideration. How gutsy, how cool would it be as a salesperson, as a marketer, to say, Ian, before you buy into Fitzmartin's Centricity model, acknowledge that you could just keep doing things the way you're doing them. Takes less time, takes less money. There's no institutional change. You don't have to sell any of your peers. You know, maybe the status quo is okay. And I think sometimes when I've had the courage to ask a question like that, and I still haven't seen visual, and of course, this is a podcast, so it's hard to see that, but I want to hear what you think about that question. But when I've had the courage to ask that question, guess what? Sometimes I discover it's not that these executives were numbskulls and didn't want to invest in marketing. It's that they had a $100 million CapEx decision that was going to impact six of the divisions and five of the executive team. They had no capacity to try this new model, this new thing. And that's, you know, if you're thinking about other people, if you have a selfless approach, then you might discover you've got a deal. It's just going to sit for a year.
Absolutely. One of the questions that I encourage people to ask that freaks them out, the top performers ask it every time, and other people are reluctant to until they see enough people doing it that they think, oh, that works, is, so if you were a prospect of mine and I said, so Sean, even if we did everything we said we would do on our end, what might prevent your organization from getting the kind of results that other people have seen? And now just shut up. And usually your client will sit back a little bit. He or she will scratch their chin and say, you know, that's one of the concerns we have is whether or not our team's actually going to execute, if they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Okay. So for some of our clients, we'll expand the scope a little bit so that we provide additional support in that area. Is that something that we should probably do in this case? Yeah, if you can add that in so that we have that additional support, that would be great. Okay. Because what they're in essence saying is, look, we're not concerned about you executing. We're concerned about us executing. And so if you can help ensure that it gets executed, that's great. And those are the things. I mean, I hear that all the time in my business where people will say, well, so how do you reinforce these concepts? I'm going, well, we have a whole platform designed to do that and to hold people accountable. Because otherwise people just, it's too easy to not follow through. And so those are the differences. And if you can ask those questions of your clients, all of a sudden it gets better. So imagine if whatever the business is, you got a B2B company and you say, so here's why these solutions don't always work inside of an organization, even when the vendor delivers everything they said they would. You don't have the right training. It wasn't there in time. People aren't maintaining the equipment. They're not doing this and that. Here are three ways to solve those. Let us know if we can help you with one of those. And by the way, one or two of those is not your company doing it. Here's a way you can solve it. A, you can set up this plan that your people internally are going to do this sort of maintenance. Here's the checklist they do every week. Plan B, you have us do this for you.
Ian, I think one of the greatest gaps of marketers today is the industry tends to think of itself as an early stage. Let's build leads. Let's do advertising. That's fine. And there's 80,000 people in America that run ad agencies that can do that. What you just said is beautiful. It's late stage. Marketing, if it doesn't take time to understand sales and align with sales needs, oh, wait, I didn't say it's sales needs, the buyer's needs. It's the buyer's needs. So marketing, how many times have you equipped the Ian Altmans of the world with that document? It's not a web page. Oh, it might be a web page. It's not in your main navigation. Maybe it is. Maybe you're really courageous. One of the most courageous bits of marketing I've ever seen was a services company that said, we can't fit everybody. We can't help everybody. Here's the 10 respected people in our space. If you can't work with us, you should call one of them. You're taking people away from your site. It's like, that's courageous. But I mean, the point is, how do you equip sales? And that's an incredible document. I'm going to add that to my playbook. All of my customers are getting that. I'll send you a derivative of the permission.
Perfect. I'll look for that. I'll check my account every week.
Absolutely, you should. All I'll need is your social security number and the bank account.
I've already given that to the Nigerian prince who emailed me, so I'll just ask him to forward it.
Perfect. Ian, you may not be as bright as I thought you were. Three questions as we head towards this finish line. One, practical question. Late stage, the salesperson's optimistic, and I think it's one of those 70%, 72% aren't going to close. But your point of contact, your champion in the organization is aligned. You know that you know the problem. They've got a $20 million problem. You know you can solve it. There's perfect alignment between you and the champion. And then two of the shareholders say, nope. And you say, well, can I talk to the shareholders? Nope, they won't let me talk. What's going on there? Diagnose that situation.
Well, so remember, I've done this research with over 10,000 executives on how they make and approve decisions. And the shareholders are, in essence, asking their direct report, who's your champion, what problem does it solve? Why do we need it? And what's the likely outcome or result? At that point, they either have not, what hasn't been communicated to them is either why we need to solve this problem, namely, what happens if we don't solve it? And why are we confident in the result or outcome? So when there's that gap, what's happened is your champion is bought in. They haven't communicated that detail up the line. Instead, what they told the shareholders is, here's what we want to buy. And the shareholders say, well, and this isn't a conscious thing that happens. Subconsciously, what's happening is they're saying, well, I don't understand what problem we're trying to solve with this thing. I don't understand what happens if we don't solve it. And I don't have clarity about what the outcome or result is going to be. And you want me to spend $100,000 on this thing. Now, I'm not spending $100,000. If that person understood that right now, not solving this is costing the organization $20 million a year, that they've tried five other ways to solve it and haven't addressed it, and that you have a track record of delivering results to solve that $20 million problem, the decision would already be made. So what we need to do is when we have these conversations with our champion, we need to summarize it in that format that says, here's our understanding of what it is you're trying to solve. Here's what we discussed about what happens if you don't solve it. Here are the things you've tried that haven't worked and what that's costing you. Here's the success that you want to achieve, and here's how you and I know that we're going to actually achieve those results together. In fact, there are two things that can get in the way of those results. And you and I have already addressed how to solve that. Now they pass that to the shareholders, and the shareholders go, well, this makes perfect sense. I know this is costing us $20 million. We've tried five other ways. We're losing market share. These guys have a proven track record of delivering it. There are two reasons we couldn't get it done, and they've addressed both of them. Yeah, what's taking you so long? Why haven't you already pulled the trigger on this? That's the gap.
You can't answer this. If there was only a way to write a really concise business case and communicate that. And if you read Ian's book, you'll learn how to do it. There, I'm plugging his book, not me. Ian, I think I just heard another way marketing should be supporting sales. If we know empirically you've got 10,000 cases, this is a repeatable, predictable pattern. Marketing should be providing sales teams with tools, i.e. a document, a web, a micro page. I mean, we're doing some really interesting things with late stage sales where we're creating a web page that's infinitely trackable by person and it's deal focused. I mean, if you think about it, you've got, let's say we'll go back to this $20 million deal. If you've got a deal that's worth $20 million, is it worth having your marketing team build a late stage sales page on a website that only that people with that prospect could see? Of course it is. In today's modern technology, that's not a super complicated long process, or it shouldn't be. If your agency is telling you it's going to take 2 months, fire them. Don't call me, but call somebody else. That's just, anyway, it's an incredible tool. So, okay, Ian, you're the CEO of a rapidly growing emerging middle market B2B business. You've decided to commit 5% of top line revenue to a new marketing initiative. Not a sales initiative, a new marketing initiative. What are you going to do? What are you seeing happening in today's world that's powerful?
You know, more than anything else, it's creating content around describing, here are the kind of problems that people come to us to solve. And because if I do that, then the top of my funnel is filled with people who actually care about solving the problems that we're good at solving. The big mistake that most people make is they, in early outreach, they basically ask people, what's the biggest issue you're facing? Here's the trap in that. What everybody knows is the following. The biggest issue that you can solve for your client is something they usually are not aware of. And so if you ask the client, what is it you're trying to solve? Guess what? If they knew it, they would have already been addressing it, but they usually don't. So if you said to them, for example, here are the three biggest trends we're seeing that are holding back B2B early stage companies from hitting the next level. Who's going to want to read that? Who's going to want to watch that video? Only early stage B2B companies who are concerned that they're not reaching that stride. That's it. So I could say, here's this widget we're selling and hope that people figure out why they need it. Or I can say, here are the types of issues that we address for people. And so I would invest my time in that type of content so that your marketplace says, if you're trying to solve this, these people have the best content on the planet around it. And then I'd make sure that as soon as somebody calls in, you've got a consistent methodology that your people follow that compress that timeline in terms of sales and focus on value instead of price.
I'm convinced. I'm going to sign up for your online tutorials. I'm going to buy your book. Where do I do all that, Ian?
The easiest place is samesideselling.com or ianaltman.com. They kind of all roads lead to the same place. Everything's kind of cross-linked. And so if you end up on samesideselling.com or ianaltman.com, you'll find me. You know, I'm not a small person, so I'm hard to hide.
Big personality, I think, is what you're referring to. Ian, I think you have a lot of content, too, that I can listen to for free. You've got some podcasts. You've got some ways that I can kind of taste and see and learn more about you. I would encourage listeners to do that. I've had the privilege to work with a lot of executives and a lot of people in sales and marketing over the years. There have been very few, maybe three, that I've said, I'm going to start pulling those processes and that thinking into the way I serve my clients. And Ian, you are one of them. Thank you so much for joining us on Centricity. Just appreciate you.
Sean, thanks so much. Really appreciate the feedback. We're always just trying to make a difference. So when I see somebody who takes these ideas, puts them to work, and makes a difference, makes my day.
Thank you, Centricity listeners. We'll talk soon.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.